Warning, the following content occasionally contains adult themes and language, which is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cinematic Rewind. Joining me today to talk about the butterfly effect is Cookie.
What's up, podcast world?
And Regent.
This is when he was trying to be serious for once, right?
So, interesting little hiccup. We were supposed to watch the Butterfly Director's Cut, but I couldn't find it, so I watched the regular one. Regent and Cookie here have seen the Director Cut, so we're definitely going to have to dive into that difference. But I did enjoy this film as far as what it was for the regular cut, which is surprising. Now seeing the scores, which are 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, 34 on Rotten Tomatoes, and 30% on Metacritic, I would never have guessed those scores. I would have thought it was much higher, at least in the 70s.
Yeah. Now, quick question, though. Are you looking up the director's cut?
No. So that is the standard cut of the film.
Which I can actually agree with. I was the one that brought up getting the director's cut on purpose because I feel it is a better version of the film.
Okay. So the Butterfly Effect director's cut has the same scores.
Okay. When I look online, I know Amazon gives it almost 5 stars out of 5 with 5,400 reviews.
Yeah, no, it's the same reviews if you look them up, at least on my end here.
Well, I'm looking at the Blu-ray release because the director's cut wasn't a theatrical release, obviously. So that's what I'm looking at.
Gotcha. But what is your guys' history with the film? And I'll start with you first, Regent.
I never saw it in theaters when it came out. This would have been right after I turned 16. Probably would have not been a fan to go see this type of movie. I honestly did not watch it until probably, I would say, college for my one psychology class. Really, outside of that, I watched it once with my friends in my dormitory and from my class, and that was the only time until now. So I don't really have much history. I do have history with Ashton Kutcher from his TV show days with That 70s Show. As much as that, there's not really a lot of history behind the movie for me.
For my history with the film, there's two definitive points. I saw the original one on TV, and it was average for me when I watched it. Of course, it was edited for TV watching. I did watch it because of Ashton Kutcher, because I watched some of his shows and some of his movies, Dude, Where's My Car? And stuff like that. I didn't know what to expect. I kind of thought it was going to probably be a horror thriller. It was kind of confusing from the trailers of what it was going to be, because it kind of had that Final Destination vibe for me. I don't know if you both watched it. I think Regent probably did. Have you ever seen Final Destination, Regent?
Yeah, I have.
Okay. So the reason why I was asking that is because it has a similar cinematography behind it. And I just wanted to see if you would validate the same thing as well.
Yeah, actually, that was one thing I did pick up on. It just had a jog in my memory which movie series was tied to it. But it also makes sense because the people that were a part of this movie actually wrote the second one.
Oh, wow. Okay, then yeah. Yeah, okay. That makes so much more sense because, yeah, I had that exact same vibe when I was watching it. So, yeah, I watched the original one and I felt it was decent. It was cool. It was aight, essentially. And when I was in college, my roommate had it and he had the director's cut. And he was saying, how do you feel about the movie? Have you ever seen the director's cut version? I was like, it was okay movie. He's like, you got to watch this. I think it'll change your mind. And he was right. I watched the director's cut. And I was like, this went from a okay movie to I like this movie. This is a good movie. Now, I wouldn't necessarily sing its praises all over the place, but I don't think it's a bad movie at all. I think it's definitely something worth watching if you're into horror. It doesn't have to be like gruesome horror, just general horror vibes, but more of a something different. It definitely is dark and depressing. And I think that's the other part I respected about the film was it was just different. The director's cut has such a, you would not expect that to be the finale because most movies don't end that way. And that turned it around for me. And it's always been a movie that I've respected since.
Now I'm very curious to actually talk about the differences between the director's cut and the theatrical cut, because it sounds like this is like a world-changing difference.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and dive in, and I hope Regent jumps in as well. Since I know both of them pretty well, I can explain the difference between the two. The production company that financed the whole project, the director and the writer, they kind of had their own story that they wanted, and the production company was like, hey, which I believe is New Line Cinema, they were worried that the film was too depressing. They were like, hey, we want these to go in the theaters, but we don't think this is going to sell tickets. So they rewrote some of the stories to make it a little lighter. And the ending that you know of is where Ashton Kutcher's character, Evan, he gets to a point where he goes back in time and he essentially is out of everybody's life, but he still kind of goes and does his own thing, but he still knows of them. They just don't know of him. That's the version you've seen, right?
That is correct.
Okay. In the director's cut, throughout the movie, they added small scenes that leads up to a big finale. The small scenes is talking about the mom talks about she had two children that died before she could give them birth. I know there's a technical term, but before they were born, they both died. And Evan was the third one that finally lived. Also, he had scenes with his father. Did you have much scenes with his father being in a psych ward?
Yeah, there was a few.
Okay, so you got that. You got a little subtle things like that. And then what essentially starts adding up to is different people start hitting about they wish they didn't want him in his life, but they're kind of leading towards more of never being born, that even he fucked up his mom's life by being born. He cursed his mom. So what happens is at the end, when he goes back in time for the final time, he actually finds a way of, he finds a video of his mom giving birth because they recorded it. And he uses that as his way to transport back to him in her womb, and he kills himself in the womb. And that's how the movie ends.
Whoa.
And everybody ends up having a wonderful life because he killed himself in the womb.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's basically to prevent a generational curse that's been stemming through the patriarchs in the family.
Yeah, and it's also implied, it's vague, but I've heard theories where you can kind of go back and forth with it, is that the two children that she tried to give birth to went through the same thing. So she's had three miscarriages in a row because they all went through the exact same thing and came to the same conclusion that I should just die and not exist. Man, I tell you, rewatching it for the second or third time at this point, I almost teared up because knowing that it was coming up, what really sucks also about the ending is, and I don't know if Regent picked up on this, was Evan never got to get closure. So much shit happens at the ending. He's rushing from one thing to the other, to the other, to the other, jumping through time to where he's kind of forced to make one final decision. He never gets a moment to be like, I love you, mom. Sorry if things happen. He gets no closure with nobody.
Yep.
And it makes it even more depressing to watch it.
Yikes. That really changes the film.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the film was dark enough, but it sounds like it can get worse.
It got worse.
Yeah. But wait, yeah. There's more.
Wow. All right. So it sounds like this might actually be the better way to watch the film, where you've seen the original cut and then you go and watch the director's.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I did it right accidentally.
Accidentally. Yeah. I wanted it to, but I also feel bad asking for you to watch two movies back to back. And they counted it. It's about 5 minutes additional time, but you still need to watch it in order because it's spliced up in different pieces. And then it's like the last 3 minutes is what's the biggest difference. But if they just added the ending to the movie you watch, it would be just come out of nowhere. Like, why did you just think of killing yourself? Like, maybe just stop talking to the girl or something like that. But that's why they needed those extra pieces where the mom's like saying all these things and everyone's kind of adding up like, dude, if you just didn't exist, I think we would all be fine. And he almost doesn't even have enough time to think about it. That's how messed up it is that he's having to make these decisions so fast. That's why it's kind of depressing, is that he's like, this might be my last chance to go back in time. I'll just go ahead and end it.
Now, did either of you know that there was three endings originally shot for the original cut of the movie?
I read up on it, but I never knew until I read up on it.
Same.
I had no clue, so please inform me.
Yeah, so the first one you've already discussed, where Evan and Kaylee recognize each other in New York, but they don't say anything, they just keep walking. The second one they actually have is like the happy ending. So think of like most RPG games, you have like the good ending, the bad ending, and then the what if. So this is the good ending. Basically, they stop on the sidewalk as they cross paths, they reintroduce themselves, and Evan asks her out for coffee. The third one, which is open-ended, is the same as the theatrical cut, but at the end, before it cuts, Evan stops, turns around, and starts following Kaylee, and then it cuts, which is similar to the film's novelization.
Yeah, so I believe the theatrical version was actually spot on for what they did. But the director's cut, from a cinematic storytelling standpoint, had hit me so much more in a more emotional response. That's why it's kind of weird to say I enjoyed it, but I did, from a emotional standpoint, that a movie could hit me as hard as it did.
Yeah, I don't know which ending I like better because I haven't seen how it matters, kind of like how it matters to me in a film standpoint of the ending where he unfortunately, you know, isn't born, is stillborn. I think it's a technical and medical term for that. Okay, yeah, because I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But I also did know this was a book, but I haven't read it, and I believe the book is by James Shallow in 2003, so it took them legitimately a year to get this made.
See, and this is the thing with early 2000 movies. There was a hot streak where, and even through me graduating high school and getting to college, there were a bunch of movies coming out where the book versions were only released like a year or two prior to the films coming out because people were buying royalties left and right for IPs to make movies.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Or it was the polar opposite where they made the movie and they then switched it to making books out of them, series like for comics or illustrated graphic novels to get them out into the market to pick up like the fans from the movies.
I remember growing up before 98, 99, 2000s, that era. Before that, really the whole book and movies were kind of a select few. Stephen King and a couple other authors were like, was it Tom Clancy?
Yep.
And a couple other people. It was like those kind of names was the books to the movies and stuff. After that, essentially, if you just sold a good amount of stuff, they were already trying to get rights. People could make backdoor deals. Go ahead and try to buy those rights. That's why after 2002, 2003, it became such a huge trend. The teenage books, anything that has more than one, a trilogy set of books, go ahead and get that rights to that. We don't know when we're going to make that. Just go ahead and grab that. So I agree with Regent. That's what I saw even on my side of things where it became newsworthy.
Yeah, even with my experience with film and the entertainment world as a whole, growing up, I saw a lot of movies on TV advertised, I should say, where there were first books and then there were movies, and sometimes the books were still coming out while the movies were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, The Hunger Games and the Divergent series. Those are the two that come to mind.
Yeah, and then failed ones like Aragorn.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about that because the books are good, but the movies are garbage.
Percy Jackson?
Yeah, Percy Jackson.
That's unfortunate, but I heard it's a TV series.
It's going to be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited. Now we can actually dive into this film. Like, so this movie has a very, very interesting premise to me, and it approaches it in a weird way. Most movies that deal with time travel usually involve the discovery of time travel, which this movie does in its own weird way. When I was first watching it, I thought I wasn't properly paying attention because I kept having moments like, I missed something. I would rewind and be like, no, I didn't, but I feel like I missed something. And it ended up being the whole time travel thing where he had missing segments of his memory. I'm like, I feel like I'm missing something big, like I wasn't paying attention. And eventually it did click, but it was definitely a weird feeling until he actually did the time travel.
I like that because they wanted you to feel how he felt.
Yes, I did like it, and I appreciated it more once I actually realized what was going on.
Yeah, on the rewatch, I had fun with it because I knew what was coming up, but it also made more sense because I actually did forget that they started with him as a child. I kept thinking or remembering them starting with him already in college. So I appreciate it even more on a rewatch that you go up with him in age and then you start going backwards and each piece makes sense. So you start out as a child, go all the way to adult, and then he's going back as a child as he's going through each piece. He's going further and further back into his childhood, which was the start of the film.
Mm-hmm. I thoroughly enjoyed it once I realized what was going on, but in retrospect, I think I'll enjoy it more on a rewatch, and I'll have to watch the director's cut this time because I know what's going on. And that visible confusion, not only in myself, but also in the other members of the film, like the cast, you can see their confusion to the way he's acting because he's not acting like that timeline's Evan. And it's great because I think something that really fascinates me about time travel is parallel worlds, or as we now know it, thank you Marvel, the multiverse. So I find it very interesting that him traveling in time via memories, one, it's a very cool way to use time travel. It's something I haven't seen before. Usually it's like a device or a machine where you build it, you have the numbers or, you know, roughly where you want to go, and you go there and you either make the changes you want to make or you're just walking around and seeing the sights, aka Doctor Who or Quantum Leap.
Yeah, and the part I appreciate too was they didn't treat it like he was such a genius that he just broke the code. He kind of did it like most people would. If you somehow figured out time travel for whatever gimmick, whatever weird way, you would kind of test it. And when he first did it, he was like, oh, wow, I have a scar from back then. And he was like, I wonder if I can pull this off again. He wanted to take advantage of it. He wanted to go ahead and start fixing things that he felt as a mistake. And I appreciate that they told it that way because I really felt it was believable. If you had that ability, it was believable.
Right. You still have that whole thing of like time travel not exactly being a thing in reality, but the way they approached it is believable, especially for someone who does have regrets about their upbringing and some of the decisions that they made. And I thought it worked really well for his character as sort of like a journey of self-discovery and correcting past mistakes.
And then we start finding out the butterfly effect. It was actually my first time ever hearing that concept, or I guess exploring that concept. I was probably about 12 or 13 when this movie came out. So I heard of that kind of thing. If you go back in time, because of things like Back to the Future and all that stuff. But the more exploration of the term of the butterfly effect, I feel like hit way more at home with this film for me. At least that was the earliest true hit at home for me.
I think experts kind of say that time travel in films so far has been inaccurate, I think, including this one, to where the most accurate representation of time travel is in Avengers Endgame. But for me, I would kind of disagree because you can't exactly be an expert on time travel because it isn't a thing.
I can agree with that. And the only thing I would argue is there is a film from the 90s, and Regent, please help me if you remember. It might have been called The Time Traveler or something like that, but the guy, the way he did time travel was he had this spear that he would get into, and he would kind of get into its own negative space in time, but it could only freeze him in place while everything else continued. So he could only go forward. He could never go back.
I don't recall that movie whatsoever.
Okay, I'll look it up at some point, but I feel like that was the premise of the movie. If I have it wrong, I'll definitely correct it. But that was something that I could see happening, is that you somehow separate yourself in time and space, but since time has already happened, you're kind of slowing matter down where everything else is going at a normal pace.
I feel like that is the most accurate version of time travel, where there's no going back. You can go forward for sure, but going back, probably not.
Yeah, I feel like things are too defined. But with this movie, I like what they did was it made it selfish with what he wanted to do. And that's why I can agree with that, is that I feel like most people, they wouldn't spend time trying to, hey guys, I cracked the code on time travel. No, you want to go back and fix some stuff. Like, hey, how can I be a millionaire? How can I do all this? Like, you would keep it to yourself and try to fix things. And in his case, when he figured out how he could do it, he also coincidentally was going to some of his darker moments in time, which also pushed him to fix whatever happened then, instead of trying to be like, hey, invest in Apple stocks before I leave,
you know, like. Amazon.
If I had time travel, I'd be so scared of changing the course of my life too much because of all the different things of time travel I've read, I've watched, I've studied. But on the other hand, I wouldn't mind having invested in Bitcoin before it became a thing.
Yeah, that's the tough part, because I go back and forth, because yeah, the outcome sounds cool, but you don't know if that outcome comes out, because you think about some of the experiences you go through in life mold you into who you are. So if you don't go through certain experiences, let's say like, okay, yeah, you got wealth down the road, but what if you don't learn how to spend it correctly? And then you end up being a drug addict, things like that, where sometimes comes with money, the negatives that comes with money, but you haven't created that discipline through your life because you changed your path. So those are the things that kind of messed me up too, where I'm like, you know, like, man, I would love to have that like wealth and stuff like that. That's typical with time travel. But if you don't go through those experiences, that discipline, I mean, you might be dead as well. Like, you got rich too fast where someone kills you for it. It's even things like that.
I've thankfully gotten to a point in my life where I would say, even with all the good and bad, I don't think I would change it because of where I'm at right now.
I'm the same way. I don't live my life with any regrets. So I wouldn't care to go through the effort of changing things.
But Regent, what are your thoughts on time travel? How would you use it, and would you use it?
Time travel, dangerous. I mean, would I do it? Probably not. I mean, I've lived a fulfilling life of highs and lows, and I think that's more than enough for one person to go through. In terms of traveling or how I would initiate the act of time traveling, the sarcastic person in me would say the DeLorean from Back to the Future, because that's one of the few first movies about time travel I grew up on.
I would still be scared on that, though, Regent.
I wouldn't want to get stuck. That thing breaks every movie.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you don't know where things are in time and space at any point. So you think this is an open road, you travel back in time, and that's where an 18-wheeler was at for a second there. You know, stuff like that, that kind of like messes with my thinking of it.
Right, and then the other one I was going to say was Stargate. You have the portals that you can go through to go back in time, or the go to a pinpointed time of life or timeline.
Stargate had its drama.
Surprise, you have to take the infinite forest.
Yeah. I just stay at home.
Only in October.
That's even worse.
Even worse.
For anyone who doesn't understand, the Infinite Forest is a reference to Destiny 2, and in October, it becomes haunted. So if you're curious, look it up. You'll see what we're talking about.
It's a good time.
Time travel is definitely a very interesting concept, and I think this movie handled it really well by making it one of the centerpieces of the film, but without making it be what the entire film is about, and I can explain what I mean. So, first and foremost, this movie is about Evan wanting to fix his life, and people around him, he wants to fix their lives as well. It's about characters, it's about stories, and it's about your place in time and your effect on other people. Primarily, that is what it is. Now, time travel is the vessel of how we explore, if that makes sense to you guys.
I agree with that. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoyed this movie, is because time travel was an important piece, but every time he did it, like, it happened so quickly, it wasn't even a big deal for me. I was really caught up with what he's going to do. Every time he went, like, okay, how is he going to try to fix this? And then once you start getting to the final quarter of the film, it's like, not only what is he going to do, how is it going to fuck up? And that's what I liked too about the film, was not that things was happening to him, but I just wasn't so caught up with, does this make sense? How is he doing this? I really, like you said, I was into the characters, like, okay, what's going to happen here? Is he going to finally be able to fix this? Is something going to go wrong? Because it felt like the more he tried to fix, the outcomes got even worse.
Yeah, it got progressively worse. And what I liked was it changed how it got worse. So for your first couple times, it changed for maybe him and Kaylee, and then it would change for his friend. I forget his friend's name.
Her brother.
Mm-hmm. Lenny, Tommy, all the outcomes for their lives would change. So he might be satisfied with one or two, but he wasn't satisfied with all of them.
And then when he got to the one where he's armless, and I was already debating on if he was going to go back in time just to be selfish. And I know that kind of sounds bad, like he's armless, but everybody else is happy. But I got it once he saw his mom have cancer and she did it because of the chain smoking. That's where I was like, okay, that's fair. You saw your mother has been struggling for all these years, suffering, if anything. And you feel like it was because of you, because of what happened. Yeah, it kind of sucks. The girl you love is with your friend, and the guy who was beating you up is this all-star now that everyone loves. You could at least live with that. Sucks about your arms, but I can understand that's the straw that broke the camel's back. I gotta go back one more time.
What I find really interesting is before he even learned about his mother's condition, he was completely satisfied with that reality, with one exception. He didn't want himself in it. He tried to remove himself from it, and Tommy saved him from that. I feel like the exploration of these parallel worlds was done really well, and it's not something you see very often in films, is time travel used to explore parallel universes, and I really liked it. It was fun. It was refreshing to see in a movie about time travel.
Now, I want to ask a heavy-handed question, is that do you feel the path that he took, even to the finale, whichever version of the film, either one, do you feel like Evan did the right thing each step of the way, or do you feel like he should have done something different?
Do I think it was necessary? No. I mean, knowing now what he would have known then about everything in his life and his potential generational curse, I think it would have been ideal for him to go through the timeline of being born, but then to keep his immediate distance of his friends and not negatively impact their life. Like, watch from a distance, but never and not get too close. As I don't want to portray it as him like stalking his friends or like watching from afar, but it's just keeping his distance. That way he does not reset or reenact any negativity or anything that's happened to them, to try to preserve their happiness and livelihood while maintaining his own if he could.
This is a tricky question, and I feel like if you put any person, including myself, into his shoes, yes, I don't live my life with regrets, or I try not to. Are there things I wish I could change? Absolutely. You know, there's things in my past I'd like to get rid of, but I feel like they have made me into the person I am today. Now, let's apply the movie to it, to where I want to go back and change those. I don't know if you put me in his life, his shoes, if I would have handled the situations any differently. I don't know how you could have improved his decision making in the film, because every time he tried to do something right, something went wrong. And that's not exactly his fault per se. He handled the situations in the way he thought was best, and he had no clue how the timeline would sort of fill out after what he did. So I don't know how you can make better decisions about affecting an entire timeline when you don't know the outcome.
Venture, I appreciate that you explained it the way you did. Actually, I think you're both correct, because when you think about it, at least for the theatrical release, kind of both things happen exactly what you're talking about. And I can agree with this, because that's the first thing you got to think of is what Evan went through. When you think about pretty much almost everything he ever went back in time, that's why he also wrote it down, is because he was going through something fucked up. I mean, you think about the basement scene, you think about the dog. These are not things that you can just easily be like, well, you should have just done it differently. These are just high stakes, high emotion. And even when he goes back in time, this man only has seconds to figure out what to do. And even when he started planning a little bit better, you can't exactly remember everything where you're at. Like, for example, when he looked for something to cut the rope, he just remembered he was around a lot of broken cars, and then he gave it to the guy who wouldn't be getting hit. I think that was a legit strategy, but then look at what happened. He ended up stabbing the other one. So I legitimately couldn't blame him for all the decisions he made, because when you look at what options he had and how rough he had it. But even though the director's cut has the more depressing ending, I can't remember exactly enough what's different down the path that he would have to have killed himself. I think still it would have been to start life in a way where he doesn't meet any of them. He just doesn't make friends with them. And that's the only thing I would differ from you, Regent, is that I would feel if I had that knowledge, I just wouldn't even be around them. I wouldn't even try to be in the same city. I'd be like, Mom, can I just go somewhere else? Can we move somewhere else? Go to a different school. I'll go to a different college. All that kind of stuff. Now, here's only one challenge, though, is when I think about the director's cut, though, I hate to say it, by the time he figures that out, he only has one way to go back. If I remember properly, he doesn't have options. So he can only go back to when he was in the womb. That's the part that also sucked. So it's like, well, if you went back there, what would you have changed? And I could see that argument.
Yeah, when you're limited on options, you don't have a choice. It's definitely an interesting film. It's definitely a darker film. And one of the things I definitely wanted to touch on is how they handled the trauma in other people's lives. When you think about Lenny's character in his main reality, the first one that you are in, that fucked him up for life to the point where he never left his child at home. He never left his room. He had the same habits he was as a child because of the trauma that he went through and experienced. And I've never met anyone with trauma that severe to where it does that. I have met people to where they have trauma, like Tommy's sister, Kaylee, to where if you go up to them and you talk about it, they just break down. They're fragile. And I really appreciated that that was shown in a film. Unfortunately, in that reality, Kaylee's outcome was not good.
Yeah, that was the challenge, was everybody just couldn't have a happy life, which I don't want to necessarily open up to a bigger can of worms, but that's part of the challenge when sometimes people say what they could have changed or if they could tell themselves when they were younger. That's part of the problem, is that, you know, we all want to be happy, but what's the level of happy that we want, though? Some could argue being sane, at least, just don't have trauma from your child, which I could say, yeah, I can agree with that. But then some people would say, well, I want the wealth. I want the, you know, the big house and all these other things. And that was another thing I felt like I took away from the film as well, that everybody just couldn't have the perfect life.
It was definitely a dark watch, because when I watched it, I took like a good like 10 minutes afterwards. And again, this is not the director's cut, which had an even worse ending. And I just had to take time and just be like, process what I had seen.
I knew it was coming, and it still felt heavy for me. I had to take a break after watching it too. And I knew it was coming.
Yeah, this is definitely a film I wouldn't recommend to everyone.
No, that's why I'm specific on more of, if you love cinema and you're more on the artistic side, that's definitely one of the things I would say, because you can appreciate the way the story is written. You're definitely a bit more open-minded to things. It's not necessarily like a full-on horror film. I feel like it's more of a thriller, but even then it's not necessarily a high thriller either. It's just like this, it's a unique film. That's the way I can put it. It's a dark, unique film.
Region, what do you think about it?
I mean, with the different tones that happen in the movie and the outcomes based on the catalyst actions of Evan, it felt like I was watching a Final Destination movie. Even like the whole point of like, what was it, Tommy murdering his dog and then Evan murdered Tommy. Like there was just a bunch of random things that just changed from the drop of his one action or that pinpoint in time that it just went from like, oh, a casual change to a far left turn. So there was definitely some elements that were very much dark, but I also wonder if some of it was more of a jump scare to get the viewers attention if the movie was slowly coming to a, I don't want to say a dry spell, but a point in the movie where people are starting to lose their interest in the movie and they're trying to get the viewer to come back to watch it.
I do want to take some time to talk about Tommy, though. What a wild character. I thought for sure when they told you all that he had done that there was going to be a reality where he was a serial killer.
You know, for me, actually, it's not necessarily that he was going to be a serial killer. It was more like, even on a rewatch, I love how they kind of position him as the villain. He's not the villain in the movie. They started it with that effect, though. Think about it. The movie starts with him beating up on people. He gets into the fight. He's like angry at Evan. He's definitely being positioned as like, oh, he's going to probably be the bad guy. And then everybody's scared of him. And I like that it essentially starts shifting from that to being like, oh, he's not the villain of the film.
Yeah, I did like how they introduced him as like, okay, you're not supposed to like him. He's going to do something really fucked up. And he does a lot of fucked up stuff. I do like how it shifted away from the blame being on Tommy just being violent to his upbringing, because your environment does have a huge effect on you. Whether you give in to that anger and that rage and that trauma kind of chooses your outcome. And again, I'm no mental health professional, but I've experienced some things of my own to where I know that the environment around you does affect you.
Yeah, I can definitely agree. And that's why I started to feel for him, especially when they had that alternate timeline where the dad just got even more abusive with them.
Yeah, the whole abuse from their father of multiple types, one I don't care to bring up on the podcast, but it really showed you as the audience how it shaped both Kaylee and Tommy in their perspective realities.
Yeah, and this is one of those times where I appreciate it being a movie and not a TV show, because I would not want to dive any deeper than it was already heavy topics to begin with.
I'm glad they left it where they did. And I know sometimes we've had this conversation where it's like, how much do you need to show in film? And I feel like what they showed implied the darkness enough to where you're like, okay, I get the point. And they kind of left it there. They let your mind sort of do the imagination work.
Yeah, the way they filmed this, I mean, especially on the director's cut, there's a couple nude parts I could care for less. It didn't do anything for the film. But outside of those pieces, I appreciate all the cinematography they did, the way they captured the scenes, because the times that I needed that fear or uneasy feeling, I never felt like they crossed the line. And especially when they started touching some really dark topics, they showed it enough to where you could get the feeling you need, and then they moved on.
Yeah, it worked really well, and I'm glad they didn't cross any boundaries, because I was worried that they were.
Oh, dude, even on the rewatch, I was like, I don't remember them crossing any lines, but I'm starting to get uncomfortable. There was definitely a couple scenes.
As soon as, like, he had blank spaces from when he went over to Kaylee's dad's house, and they said that they filmed something, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, and even the dog part.
Ugh.
When he blinks out and then you just see the smoking bag and it's ripped open, just burnt dust. Like, you never even really see the dog during that sequence, but still, that to me is good editing. Like, that's how you do it. You never really show the gruesome act. You show like the before and after. You do it with music, the lighting effects, to where you get the feeling, but you never went into gruesome territory.
Especially when there's so much more in this film that makes it dark enough, you don't need the weight of the gratuity of it all.
Yeah, and that was something I kind of went back and thought. I was like, you know, sometimes they say it has some of these like horror elements, but it was never gruesome at any point. Even with the blood, it was still just a little bit of blood in comparison to like a movie like Saw. This is child's play. You know, like this was no blood in comparison. But yeah, there was never like mutilated bodies. They never show too much of anything, really. That's kind of my point for Hollywood.
My favorite aspects of horror don't usually contain anything to do with blood or gore. It's usually something psychological. It's usually suspense or something that makes you uncomfortable. And now it doesn't need to be what happened in this film in the basement. It can just be things where you're on the edge of your seat. You know, you're kind of wincing and tensing up a little bit. It can be that, and that is horror to me. And parts of this movie were what I would consider to be good horror. Now, was the whole movie technically a horror? No, not really. But I got enough of it. Regi, I know you're more of a horror guy. What did you think?
I felt like bits and pieces of it were, like I was saying earlier, there were some definitely dark things that are very realistic, and some of it did feel like jump scare. I'm more on the side of practical effects versus CGI when it comes to horror and any type of gore, for that matter. So when I see a lot of horror movies using special effects or having to rely on a computer image to dictate something that's, you know, could have been done with practical effects and some time and actual editing, that's one thing. But then when a movie has to heavily rely on it, I get immediately turned off. So like when Final Destination went 3D and relied on a lot of CGI, I stopped watching the series after the third one. But I grew up heavily on 80s, where it was practical effects, great camera work, time, patience, and a love for art.
Mm-hmm. I've actually never been one for a gory horror. I feel like it's a cheap way out to get reactions out of people as far as horror goes. I feel like storytelling in of itself, if you're telling the right story, it should be scary. Well, what's going to happen? What's happening next? The scene makes me very uncomfortable. The storytelling aspect of it was perfect, and I like it. It was very well done. But that's all I have to say on the film. Is there anything else you guys want to bring up before we wrap it up?
Nope, I'm all good.
No, I can do my final score with the film. To wrap up, I enjoyed this film. I do kind of miss Ashton Kutcher being in the spotlight for films. He did start out like kind of like that typical college broski kind of guy, and then he ended up really showing a lot of talent. I think he actually is a great actor once he started getting his footing. And this is actually my favorite film of his. Outside of that, I do feel like the original film is on the more of a 6 to 7-ish. And I know it's only a small chunk that's different, but it's just something about how it changes the path he ends up on. It's a similar path, but it's one thing to end up somewhere nice versus falling off a cliff. It's like it just changes how you see how that path leads it, even if it's a very similar path. The director's cut, I would lean almost at an 8. I would say overall, though, I wouldn't even want to necessarily give it a number score. I would call this film a above average film, but it is for particular audiences to watch it. I would definitely not recommend it to the light at heart, but I think it's a good film worth watching if you can handle a film like that.
I would say for the movie, for what it was, I would give it a 6 out of 10. It's good for a one-time viewing. I definitely, at least my taste, I would not go back and watch it again. I do agree with a lot of the critics over time that they realized that they were just ragging it because of Ashton Kutcher. But when they went back and rewatched it, they started to appreciate more of his work behind it. And I'm kind of in the same boat.
That's interesting to hear, because this is fascinating to me to hear that people ragged on the movie because of Ashton Kutcher. And I don't have a history with him at all. This is actually the first film I've seen with him in it, but it didn't really sway how I felt about the film at all. And I'd have to give this movie a 7 out of 10, because I enjoyed it for multiple different aspects. Number one, its use of time travel. Number two, its story relying heavily on character and character interaction. That's something I'm a huge fan of. Number three is, of course, the horror aspects. The thriller aspects. I do enjoy those kind of moments in a film where you're uneasy about, well, what's going to happen? What's the outcome of this? And where are we going next? So I enjoyed those different aspects. Where I think it kind of didn't exactly hit home might be changed with the director's cut, because the ending to me in the theatrical cut kind of felt hollow, to where he's like, okay, I'm going to burn all my stuff and I can never time travel again. Dude, if you look at a picture on Instagram 10 years from now, you're going to be able to time travel. You're going to be able to go back and change your life.
That actually doesn't sound as cool, because that means it could almost activate at any time.
Yeah. So Facebook, Instagram, MySpace, Snapchat, Twitter. He can go back and change his life at any point. So he didn't actually give up time travel. He just gave up time traveling to his childhood. As far as that goes, it doesn't leave a huge mark on how I felt about the film, but I don't know. It just felt like lesson wasn't exactly 100% learned and it didn't resolve the issue of time travel completely. Other than that, I enjoyed the film. But that's all we have to say on this episode of Cinematic Rewind. Cookie and Regent, thank you very much for joining me.
A pleasure as always.
Thanks for having me.
All right. And thank you, listeners, for listening. If you did enjoy this episode, please leave a like, share, review on whichever platform you're probably listening to this podcast on. It helps us out a lot. And you should also share this episode with a friend because that way they know you enjoy our content. And it's a great way to spread a podcast. Word of mouth is one of the best ways to spread a podcast. If you haven't been keeping up with our social medias, we have gone bi-weekly. Keep looking at our social medias to see when we post an episode and we will catch you on the next one. I hope you have a wonderful day. Bye. Thank you.